Janmadyasyaya tunvayat itadattas chartesh fabhigyak swarat tene brahma vidya yadikovaye muyanti yatsurayah tejo vadimidamyata vidmayo yatra tvisargo visha dabna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi. Translation. O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge under the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. I have to take my age clock medicine. Hold on a second. Wrapped in newspaper. Okay. Last paragraph, I think. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology, Adirasa, devoid of all mundane inebriety. This is in italics. The whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. In modern civilization, sex life is the focal point for all activities. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. Therefore, sex life is not unreal. In reality, its reality is experienced in the spiritual world. The material sex life is but a perverted reflection of the original fact. The original fact is in the absolute truth. And thus, the absolute truth cannot be impersonal. It is not possible to be impersonal and contain pure sex life. Consequently, the impersonalist philosophers have given indirect impetus to the abominable mundane sex life, because they have overstressed the impersonality of the ultimate truth. Consequently, man, without information of the actual spiritual form of sex, has accepted perverted material sex life as the all in all. There is a distinction between sex life and the diseased material condition and spiritual sex life. The Srimad Bhagavatam will gradually elevate the unbiased reader to the highest perfectional stage of transcendence. It will enable him to transcend the three modes of material activities, fruit of actions, speculative philosophy, and worship of functional deities as inculcated in Vedic verses. That's the end of the purport to this verse. Janmadyasya, Adyasya, Janmadi Asya, or Janmadyasya is another way to read it. A little peculiar, because the Vedanta Sutra is not talking about Madhurya Rasa, and this is a quotation from the Vedanta Sutra, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur sees this higher understanding. He actually gives six different explanations of this verse on six different levels. This is one of them, the last one, I think. Adyasya, the birth of the first one, the first what? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it's the first rasa. Because, what was it? Anvayavyatirek, or rather, anvayaditaratascha. Well, he's reading it to mean that the birth happens by. This is a different meaning of anvayavyatireka, instrumental. The instruments or the means. That birth is begotten, it happens by anvaya and vyatireka. Well, anvaya and vyatireka can mean at least a half a dozen different things. One of them, the one that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out in this interpretation, is that in the loving relationship, especially between Krishna and the gopis, you can read all about it in the Ujjvala Nilamani, if you like, if you dare. Some of it is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are things we can read about in Nectar Devotion also. That, especially the Madhurya Rasa, but to some extent other rasas, there are two modes of having ecstatic exchange with Krishna. Sambhoga and Vipralamba. There is the pleasure of being with Krishna. Not just enjoying sense gratification, but being in Krishna's company. Seeing him. And then there is the apparent torture of being separated from him. In some of the Vaishnava Sampradayas, here in town, they don't like this Vipralamba. They avoid it. Just like in some Sampradayas, they're embarrassed by Krishna and his Vajalilas. You know, they're embarrassed by them. Krishna and the gopis, you know, what's going on? They just don't pay much attention to that. God can do whatever he wants, including illicit sex, but they don't understand it. How is Krishna running around with other men's wives? They don't understand it. They're more or less embarrassed by it, some Vaishnavas. And then other Vaishnavas, they don't understand Vipralamba Bhava. They want to enjoy with Krishna. They want Radharani to always enjoy with Krishna, and they want to be there also, enjoying with Krishna. It doesn't make sense to them. Why be separated from Krishna? Why suffer? This is a more sublime secret that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed. That the highest happiness is found in the apparent misery of separation from Krishna. The whole mood of this sampradaya, is the characteristic mood is the mood of Vipralamba Seva. That's our understanding. That's what Prabhupada taught us. Do you remember Prabhupada telling us that the real theme, the real mood of this sampradaya is Manjari Bhava? Prabhupada ever tell you that? I don't think so. This is the prejudice of the Babaji's. That's the only show in town is Manjari Bhava, and that's all that interests Krishna. And that's all that it should interest a real devotee. And anyone who's not into Manjari Bhava isn't a real devotee. That's actually their prejudice. You know, it's a small, exclusive group. If you're initiated into the Manjari Bhava, then you're part of the group. And if you're not, you're outsider. You're not really a sadhu. You can be considered a Vaishnav, but you're a, you know, outsider Vaishnav. And you can't sit in the same row and eat lunch with those who are initiated. Should we institute that? Should we have separate rows for the initiated and uninitiated devotees? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur heard of such an arrangement being made in one of his mutts, and he was not happy about it, that such discrimination was going on. And Prabhupada wouldn't have liked it either. I don't think anybody even tried that. Maybe in some ISKCON temple, someone attempted to sit the... There have been attempts to, you know, put the certain groups of devotees and, you know, have them eat separately. But no, Vaishnava is a Vaishnava. And Krishna is Akilara Samrita Murti. He is the embodiment of all the rasas. There is the first and best rasa, but it's not the only rasa. And therefore, there is room in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya, there's certainly room in ISKCON, for though even those who don't even have the potential, because it's not their sarupa, to become manjaris. You can become a sadhu even if you can't become a manjari. You can be accepted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and accepted by our branch of the sampradaya as a real Vaishnava. But it is the first and highest relationship with Krishna. Adyasya, Adirasa. Not that it's the first one. It doesn't evolve first. Chaitanya Bhagavat gives some description of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifesting gradually this Gopi Bhava. That he first was experiencing, you know, after he got initiated by Ishwarapuri and was chanting Harinam. It doesn't say that he was initiated into some esoteric, you know, Raghunuga initiation. He was initiated into Harinam. And by chanting, there's another prejudice that Harinam is some, you know, second-rate process, and you got to get officially initiated into, you know, Raghunuga Marg, and you have to have a parchi, a piece of paper that shows the pedigree of your guru, what line he's coming from, and prove it. Otherwise, you're not allowed to be. I'm alluding to what Dravidi read yesterday about. He was reading about Madhusudana Saraswati. He got that material apparently from some Babaji source. Must have. I'll speak to him about it. I think he should do a little editing on it, because there's things in there that could confuse immature devotees. So one of them is that you have to, the one Babaji prejudice is that you cannot enter into Raghunuga Marg unless you've got the pedigree, a piece of paper that shows who your guru is, and you have to have that Diksha connection is the whole thing. That's your entrance. So they, what is our disagreement with them? That's a technical thing. We also say you have to be qualified and you have to have bona fide initiation. We don't disagree about that. We don't insist that you have to have a piece of paper. But the thing is, there's some disagreement about which lines are bona fide. Specifically, our main problem with them is not philosophical. It's not even theoretically about practice. Theoretically, most of them are also chanting Hare Krishna and following some regular principles and worshiping the deity, serving the Vaishnavas. This is our practice. Basically the same philosophy, us and the Babajis. Where we disagree is that they don't accept our line as bona fide. We have no quarrel with them. But they reject Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, that he was not properly initiated by Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, that there's no proper diksha in our line. And therefore, we're bogus. That is their viewpoint. And that's where we have a quarrel. Because without the diksha, there's no entrance into the higher realms of devotional service. That's their viewpoint. Well, our diksha is bona fide. As far as we're concerned, the shiksha is as important as the diksha. Diksha must be there. But sometimes the more important connection is the shiksha. Who, tell me, is the initiating spiritual master of Srila Rupa Goswami? Anybody know? Yes? Yes? That has been proposed by some Babajis and Goswamis. They're saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally initiated Rupa Goswami. Of course, he gave him a name. But he didn't form. I don't think Prabhupada ever said he formally initiated that Mahaprabhu is the Diksha Guru of Rupa Goswami. We don't know. He probably took formal initiation from somebody. We just don't. You know who it is? Really? Okay. Wow. Okay. Maybe that's a fact, or maybe it's just someone's guess. Anyway, I thought we didn't know who is initiating spiritual master. It's just anonymous. His name is not recorded, as far as I understood. Or maybe it was him. But it's not a prominent fact, at least. Rupa Goswami was personally instructed and empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's what matters. So, the shiksha, especially if you're getting it from Mahaprabhu or his direct representative, can be more important than diksha. Diksha is there, and it should be bona fide. But it's not the whole thing. So, anyway, there were some prejudices of the Babaji's that were manifested in that article that Dravida Prabhu read. Don't have to aspire or be a candidate directly for Manjari Bhava in order to enter the Sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if you do want to practice the Raghunuga Marg in the line of the gopis, you can. And you don't need any other sadhana than Harinam. You don't need to, it's not a separate sadhana. It's a continuum. By practicing Vaidhi Bhakti, it will transform into Raghunuga Bhakti when you're qualified. And you may get formal instruction. You may get a formal authorization or not. If not, if there's no one around who's a qualified instructing spiritual master in the esoteric matters of Raghunuga Marg, then the holy name itself and the Srimad Bhagavatam and your guru in your heart can give you those instructions. Harinam is not, chanting Hare Krishna is not some secondary, second-rate process only for neophytes. Anyway, Janmadi Yas Asya, if we take Janma Adyasya, if we take this special interpretation given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, then this first verse of the Bhagavatam is discussing how Krishna shows his highest glory by manifesting this Madhurya Rasa, this loving relationship he has with the young gopis of Vrindavan. This is the Adi Rasa. I was explaining how it's not literally the first manifested rasa. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gradually showed his mood, he gradually manifested it, starting with the lower rasas, working up. After in a couple of weeks, he started showing higher symptoms. But in the beginning, he was just displaying dasya, then sakya, then vatsalya. So in the stages of evolution, in the chronological sense, it's the last, not the first. But as Adya Rasa, the first of all the rasas in prominence and importance, and in qualitatively, in the degree of pleasure that it evokes, the degree of happiness, the degree of satisfaction it gives to Krishna is the greatest, the most. And therefore, it's the first among all rasas. The Bhagavatam does discuss it, but Shukadeva Goswami, certainly Vyasadeva, is only alluding to it if he's doing it intentionally at all. Vishwanath Chakravarti is reading or seeing this. Maybe Vyasadeva didn't see it. The words came out of his mouth. Maybe he didn't know what he was saying. But if even so, Vyasadeva is not being too explicit about it. Shukadeva Goswami, later on in the 10th canto, is not as explicit as he could have been about Krishna's dealings with the gopis. He's very tactful. He does not even mention the name of Srimati Radharani. Out of respect, but also out of, one explanation is if he said the name of Srimati Radharani, he would lose his composure and not be able to continue reciting properly. But a third idea is that the Bhagavatam has to be understood also by the neophytes who are not ready to enter into these higher realms. So things have to be presented tactfully. Prabhupada has taken the 10th canto, which is already a careful presentation that will not disturb the minds of those who are, whose faith and purity is not on the highest level. Sukadeva has not, you know, said things that will stimulate the lusty feelings of materialists. And then Prabhupada has taken that 10th canto and pre-digested it in the form of the Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Krishna book, where he explains everything, not to, only gives Shukadeva Goswami's version, but then explains everything, right purports right into the text, so that we understand everything in proper proportion and in proper context. There is no mundane inebriety in the relationship between Krishna and the gopis. Until we are free from that inebriety of sex agitation, we will not understand this relationship. That's why the actual prerequisite for being allowed to enter Raghunuga Marg is not that you have a piece of paper proving who your guru is, but that you have, Rupa Goswami says, Loba is the adhikar for beginning Raghunuga practice, for the intimate remembrance of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. That loba is explained by Prabhupada as being loba or greed. It means, the way Prabhupada explains it to us, to be free from sex agitation. Otherwise, how can you understand the transcendental relationship between Krishna and the gopis? We can read the Bhagavatam, but we should be careful about getting much into things much more than what Shukadeva Goswami presented. We can find more intimate descriptions in the works of the Goswamis in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But we should consider carefully when we are qualified to actually read these books. Some of the books are more intimate than others, and the ones that are particularly intimate, we should be careful not to prematurely jump into them. What is it? Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoibu Akuti. And what's the, after that? Tobe Bujibo She Yugala Pariti. Now, Prabhupada has translated Pada there as literary works, the books. When I am seriously attracted to the books, the works, the writings of Rupa and Raghunath, then I'll understand the love between Radha and Krishna. This is our key. What Rupa Goswami, what Raghunath Das Goswami has revealed in their literary works explains to us this Adi-Ras, even beyond what Shukadeva Goswami has made explicit. But we have to wait until we're qualified to delve into these intimate teachings. They're there for us, but when we're ready to read them. You know, we have them in the library. You can go down to Loy Bazaar and purchase all the books in English translation or in the original Sanskrit or in Bengali or Hindi. But we should be first ready to read them before we jump in. Shukadeva Goswami has made it possible for even us who are still burdened by lust, envy, and greed to some extent. By presenting the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's made it possible for us to enter into the realms of pure devotional service. And the whole gamut is there. Shukadeva Goswami does explain the Raghunuga practice. He does exemplify it in the behavior of the gopis with Krishna. But we have to read it carefully to understand it. We can read through these chapters of the Rasa-lila and not properly understand. We have to, by surface, By careful study, by getting the blessings of the Vaishnavas, then we can understand. Hare Krishna. Okay, so I'll stop. Any questions or comments? Nityanipu had his hand first.
If you could kindly explain what Jiva Goswami means by Ajataruchi Raganuga. Ajataruchi Raganuga.
Ajataruchi Raganuga. Oh, well, there's Raganuga practice. So, if you have the adhikar to begin the practice, even if you don't have ruchi, real taste is ruchi and then rati. Ruchi is serious attraction to the actual practice of serving Krishna, loving service. Higher than that is attraction to Krishna himself. But we're talking about ruchi, real taste for devotional service. Even if you don't have it, you may begin Raganuga practice if you've got this lobha. If you really want it, even though you don't have it yet, you want to be seriously, you want to become really attracted to devotional service in Krishna. But even that cannot be had until you progress beyond anartha nivritti and are fixed in, when you're fixed in nishta, then you can talk about ruchi or think about entering ruchi. You have to go one step at a time. Basically, although there may be some overlapping, you may start to develop the higher stages while you're still on the lower stage. But to actually have awakened ruchi, you have to be beyond mostly beyond material contamination. So ajata ruchi, but not ajata nishta. Yeah. You got to be beyond nishta, and you may not have attained ruchi yet, then you can begin. You may begin then Raganuga Bhakti if you're invited to enter. Okay. Went over there. We'll work this way.
Hare Krishna. I also heard an explanation. I was going to ask a question, but just to the Tajata Ruchi, if you don't mind. There was an explanation that even our common practices, they have the potential of awakening the Raganuga Bhakti, even though they appear to be something ordinary. An example is given, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura, I think he explains the Bhakti Lata Bija, and it first two leaves, they're closed, but the inner part of those leaves is very smooth and glossy, and the outer is a bit rough, and you could say, I don't know, rough. But that outer is compared to that sadhana bhakti, external manifestation of it, which doesn't appear to be Raganuga in any way. Yes. But the internal, inside, is there. So some devotees from ISKCON, like Suhotra Maharaj, I think he was explaining that in our common practices, chanting Hare Krishna mantra and preaching and worshipping the deity, that Raganuga is already there, so we don't have to go to some self-acclaimed or reportedly Raganuga Bhakta to get some particular way of Raganuga Bhakti, because it's later there, it just has to take its time to manifest.
Yes.
And that's what I heard. Yes. Adding to what you have just said. And a question about Diksha, if you don't mind. You've explained that there's an approach of Babaji's to Diksha, and then they discriminate against devotees on the basis of whether they received Diksha or not.
The only diksha they consider important is diksha into Manjari Bhava.
Right, the Manjari Bhava.
Yeah.
And we also saw in other approaches to diksha, like we can see devotees receiving diksha from Prabhupada while he is in his Nitya Lila, in the spiritual world. So that's a wide range of dikshas, you could say extreme cases. Some people say that you cannot even chant Hare Krishna without receiving diksha. Mm-hmm. And some say you can just receive diksha anywhere, from any point of time. So what is exactly our stance on diksha? Where does it start? Where does it finish? And what is the qualification?
Well,
maybe it's too broad of a question.
Yeah. You should take, okay, my understanding. You know, devotees may have varying opinions. I'll just give my understanding, which I hope is in line with our Siddhanta. You have to take you have to have initiation from a bona fide Vaishnav you know, who is actually in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is faithfully representing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I wouldn't say you have to take initiation in ISKCON. If you want to be a member of ISKCON, then you should take your initiation in ISKCON and your shiksha. Otherwise, you're identifying yourself as something other than a member of ISKCON, which you're free to do. But if you want to be a member of ISKCON, our standard for being in ISKCON is stay in ISKCON, take your diksha and your shiksha from ISKCON, because there's trouble and complications created if you don't stick to that standard. So then if we're talking about devotees who want to be part of ISKCON, then it's sort of strict. Initiation means from one of our, you know, a representative of ISKCON, and also your shiksha should come. You shouldn't go outside for spiritual instruction. And this idea that Prabhupada can be your diksha guru, it's bogus. There's no precedent, real precedent for it in standard Vaishnava practice history. And diksha guru, you have to have association with a diksha guru. Prabhupada was there to talk to his disciples and give them personal instructions. And he wanted that, as far as I understood, that the Sampradaya be continued and that his disciples also become gurus and do the same job. I don't see any first, middle, or final instruction from Prabhupada that contradicts that. That Prabhupada wanted his disciples to also become gurus. And he had the power to make his disciples fit for that. So that's going too far, to think that you can get your diksha from Prabhupada when he's not present anymore. You can do it, but then you're, again, not within the orthodox line of ISKCON anymore if you do that. Yes, I'm sorry.
And that gives very clear indication what is Sahajism, what is Prakrata, both sides. It makes very, very clear. And it's a very useful tool for understanding what you're dealing with in this crazy world we're in. And the other thing I wanted to say was, in terms of reading the books of the Goswamis, my understanding is that reading of the books of the Goswamis means that we actually follow their instructions. So we're starting with books like Hari Bhakti Vilas, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and by actually following the instructions of the Goswamis, we gain their mercy, and then we gain further entrance. It's not enough just to read the books, but we actually have to apply the teachings in Nectar of Devotion, in Upadeshamrita.
Yes.
And then we actually get some access. It's not a theoretical thing. It's just a point I wanted to make.
They're textbooks that are meant to be practiced.
Yeah, it's for vigyan. And the other question that I had was about the purport, where Prabhupada says, the material sex life is but a perverted reflection of the original fact. The original reflection gives the Vaikuntha model, where you have anashram, you have properly married people and this kind of thing. But what we're dealing with in Kali Yuga is reflection upon reflection upon reflection. So now you can legally marry a dog, you can you can do so many things. Yes. So my question was, does this perversion, and it's becoming more and more perverse even within the last 20 years, does that interfere with our ability to actually understand and, you know, have some access to this adiras?
Yeah, you got to give up this. You got to give up this perversion if you want to be able to understand Krishna's intimate dealings with his devotees. You can't be a pervert and understand Krishna's leelas. Mm. You know, you'll have to divorce your dog, or your. Whatever you've married to, and go straight if you want to understand the intimate teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
It seems to really, you know, feed faithlessness, you know, this kind of
It does. I mean, breaking the laws of nature pollutes the heart. You can't even become a civilized human, acting as a civilized human being, or to speak of becoming a pure devotee. You can't.
Takes opportunity to say something about Mayavadi. He says that rejecting the Adirasa, they indirectly approve the abominable mundane sex life.
Yes.
Encourage.
Yes.
So could you elaborate?
Well, it's not that they come out and say, you know, Krishna never had a Rasa Leela. That, you know, they're not denying it. In fact, they'll join in on glorifying it. But they're cheating, because they glorify Krishna's pastimes and his relationship with his devotees, and then say it's ultimately illusion. Yeah, God, the absolute truth being a person is a nice illusion. It's the best illusion, but it's an illusion anyway. It's Maya. That's why we call them Mayavadis, because they think that Krishna is also Maya, and Krishna's devotional service is also Maya. It's some indulgence of those who are too emotional. Is to make God into a person and have a relationship with Him. It's an illusion. So they deny all the rasas, not just the Madhurya rasa. They deny that they're ultimately real. They're convenient fictions, and they're good for entertaining the sentimental and making them pious. But those who are smarter know that it's illusion. So they're rejecting all the rasas, and what was Prabhupada's conclusion? And therefore,
they encourage mundane sex.
Oh, they're encouraging mundane sex. Certainly. Mundane sex doesn't need much encouragement. You know, it's there in everybody, the urge for it. But by not putting restraints on it, then it just goes on and on. So, because there is no absolute truth is not a person, therefore, there are no personal standards. What's wrong with eating chicken? Yeah, what's wrong with killing a chicken and eating it? If the absolute truth is impersonal. If the absolute truth is Krishna, and he gets angry when you kill a chicken, then there's a reason. But if there's no Krishna, if it's just impersonal Brahman, and everything's the same, whether you know, cut off something's head and put it in your mouth or leave it alone, it's the same thing, then that encourages all sorts of nonsense. Lord Shiva says in one place in the Padma Purana to his wife that I've been told by Govinda, ordered to become a brahmana and teach on the earth and teach Mayavad philosophy in order to increase unwanted population, Varna Sankara. Because by saying everything is the same, it means it doesn't matter what you do. You don't have to follow any standards of ethics. Really, because there's no person, absolute truth, personality of Godhead, there's no real person there who is pleased or displeased by what you do. It doesn't matter what you do. So that's how Mayavad philosophy promotes illicit sensuous life. It works. You know, the spread of impersonal philosophy has made it possible for sense gratification to become acceptable all over the world. We can see it in modern history.
The other day we had a discussion. Well, we met this devotee. I know a little bit. This devotee actually used to be in Vancouver and doing lots of service, very enthusiastic. Always very enthusiastic, and every devotee liked him. And then, all of a sudden, he went to India. And then after he came, I saw him after 6 months. And then he came back to Vancouver. And then we went back to India, and he's been Govardhan since then. He was at the temple of Bhakti Swarup Damodar doing Food for Life there. Then something didn't work out there, and then he started doing Parikram. every day, then maintaining himself by Madhukari, and then now he's serving as a pujari in one of this, like a temple here. And you see, like, he's very, like, he looks like a Babaji almost, like the way he
yes.
dresses. And
yes.
But he's also showing symptoms, like, that he's not very attached to the body. Not that he shows it to everybody, but just we can see by some of his activities. And so we didn't know how to properly understand him. Like, the question was, well, that's not what Prabhupada wants us to do, you know, not live a life like that.
Yes.
To preach, be part of a preaching mission. But, so I was a little bit confused, saying, well, I mean, I have respect for him. I know he's always been very serious about Krishna consciousness, but I don't know what to think about him.
I presume he's not a Prabhupada disciple, is it? He's a disciple of Prabhupada's disciple, right?
No, yeah.
He's initiated.
His guru left the movement.
Oh, okay. Well, I would say if his guru had, let's take it theoretically, had told him, you go to Govardhan, do parakram every day, and live by the roadies you beg, that's okay. You know, it's not that we forbid doing Govardhan parakrama. It's, you know, the guru might tell the disciple, that's your service. But it has to be authorized by the bona fide representative of Prabhupada. So, this devotee, who's authorized his activity? Yeah, that's the question. You know, I don't think you should judge it just that he's doing this horrible thing, going around Govardhan. Yeah, and maybe he didn't tuck his dhoti in, but you can't judge just by that. But under whose order is he doing that? That's the question. Who told him to do that? Is it bona fide? Is it authorized? I may be doing everything that looks proper, but it may be exactly the opposite of what my guru told me to do. Yeah. He maybe told me, don't go to Govardhan. Yeah. I want you to go somewhere else. And if I go to Govardhan, then I'm in Maya, because my guru told me to do something else. That's what matters. So you probably know in this case. Okay, so we don't have to pick on this one devotee. Yeah. Yes, bro. Yes.
No, from a present guru version, but there is something like there is some incident that someone got. I mean, as having the dream. I meet some devotees like that. He told that particular devotee is very very nice devotee. They perform their duties, chanting 16 rounds. But he didn't.
You mean devotees that you know?
Yeah, I mean
they got their initiation in a dream.
I mean they got initiation in the dream from Prabhupada.
That's okay.
And then he won't take any more initiation. What about this?
That's not standard. I mean, Krishna can do what he wants, but we can't say, well, everyone can do that. It's abnormal. Maybe Krishna chose to do that, but we can't authorize that procedure. So get your, you know, even if Prabhupada appeared to you in a dream, why can't you go out and do, you know, and do the right thing so it doesn't confuse everybody? Just take initiation also. Even if Prabhupada initiated you in a dream. But externally, you can behave normal. There's no rule against that. What's the horrible thing in taking shelter of Vaishnavas? Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes. We're running out of time, but again.
In UK, I forgot her name, but there's a lady in UK, a devotee, a disciple of Bhakti Charo Maharaj, and she is confirmed case of like reincarnation memory, because she does remember being Prabhupada disciple in her previous life. It's documented, it's not just an imagination.
Yes.
And he was serving as a is a brahmachari in UK, I think, and he died in a car accident. And then he
knows who she was.
He knows exactly. She knows exactly what
okay.
he or she was. Anyway, she plays mridanga the same style, and she went and met her parents. But she still took initiation from Bhaktisharma Maharaj, although she was initiated by Prabhupada in a previous lifetime.
Many devotees were devotees in their previous life. And it's not like we'll all go to a hypnotist and find out who our guru was and that's it. We're supposed to take initiation. Lord Brahma takes initiation every day of his life. Yeah. It's not always from the same guru. Sometimes he takes from Saraswati, sometimes from Gopala directly. And yeah. So that's we're all dying and taking birth again and we're supposed to take initiation again. Once a life, only once.
Maybe it's a little bit technical question. I read in one book by Mahanithi Maharaj that sannyasi in our line is taking Gopi Bhava mantra.
Yes.
And sannyasi in our line,
yes,
they're taking Gopi Bhava mantra, special mantra.
He gives the mantra.
Yeah. So does it
Probably
mean that they have more chances to develop this Gopi Bhava and Grihastha, they don't have such a chances?
Maybe they have some advantages. Disadvantage in being a sannyasi in itself, apart from the mantra. So yes, they have some advantage. There's an advantage in being a sannyasi. But even without the advantage, you can attain the highest perfection.
And in the case that if a particular
Krishna gives special favor to the underprivileged, yeah.
And
Krishna deals with everybody as an individual, and he'll reach out further to you because you don't have the advantage.
And for example, if this particular sannyasi he is not in the Madhurya Bhava in his original spiritual state, for example, he is in Sakya Bhava. And
just by having the mantra doesn't automatically make you achieve the perfection of chanting the mantra. You may practice it, and because it's not your sarupa, it won't give the same result. We're chanting Hare Krishna. That's also Krishna and Radharani being worshipped, but it has different effects on different devotees because of their different sarupas and different levels of development. There are devotees of Ram who chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra because they see Lord Ramachandra in it. And it works like that also for them. We got to stop now. Okay, go ahead.
Tamal Krishna Maharaj once asked this question about Gopi Bhava, if I'm not mistaken, him. And Prabhupada told him, for you, sannyasis, Gopi Bhava means you're ready to sacrifice anything for the sake of Krishna's service. That's Gopi Bhava for you.
Yes.
So I think Grihasthas are not excluded from that, even though they don't chant that Gopi Bhava mantra.
Yes.
It's just for sannyasis, it's a dharma. They should do it all the time.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jaya.